This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Just over a year ago, two local congregations became convinced that they could do more together for the gospel than they were doing apart. Welcome Baptist Church and Palmetto Baptist Church came together as one congregation. And on the one-year anniversary, Pastor Sam Horn delivered this sermon from Psalm 138, celebrating and practicing a bold faith. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
I'd like to invite you to consider the psalm that we read together the last time we met at Amplify, and that was referenced earlier in our service this morning, the 138th psalm. And this morning, I'd like for us to consider out of that psalm how we might celebrate and how we might practice a bold faith, because that's really what has happened as we have come here. All that has happened here over the last year and really over the last number of years has happened because of the faith that we have placed in the Lord. The setting to the psalm in front of us, Psalm 138, is an interesting setting. The book of Psalms is divided into five units, and the book of Psalms in its current form was compiled by a man named Ezra as he brought God's people back from captivity. You remember the story of Daniel in Babylon. For 70 years, God's people had been under captivity. God had driven them away from the land. He had allowed the army of Nebuchadnezzar to do that because of their disobedience, because of their faithlessness in him. And after 70 years, God began to work, and Daniel worked with a king named Cyrus, and Cyrus issued a decree that allowed all of God's people to come back to their land, and Cyrus appointed a man named Ezra to lead them back. Ezra was a teacher of the law. He was a student of Moses, and Ezra had the kind of bold faith that would bolster a nation that was desperately in need of that kind of faith. Because when they got back to the land, their city had been totally destroyed. Their temple had been disassembled stone by stone so that nothing remained, and they had to rebuild everything. They had to rebuild the city, they had to reestablish the worship of God, and they had to rebuild their temple, and it was a monumental task. And what was called for was a deep, bold faith, a confidence in God. And so when Ezra began putting together the book of Psalms, he arranged these five books to help prepare and cultivate that kind of faith in these kinds of people. The first two books are David's prayers. Most of the prayers of David in the book of Psalms are in the early part, because Ezra wanted to take them all the way back to their history and say, now God made some promises to David way back at the beginning, and those promises are still in play. So book one is the rise of David to the throne of Israel, and book two is the rise of his son Solomon in answer to the promise of God. And Ezra points to those two books, and he says, now as we worship God, and as we rebuild our lives, and as we rebuild the temple, and as we rebuild our city, we're going to need to remember the God of David and the God of Solomon, who made promises that he always keeps. And then in book three, Ezra says, now I also want you to go back in your history, and I want you to remember what happened when David's sons began to lose their faith in God, and they began to follow other gods. And so book three is the story of how David's sons went into a great decline, and eventually the kingdom was lost. And Ezra says to the Israelites as they stand in the ruins of their city, I also want you to remember book four. Book four in the book of Psalms is about the fact that even in your darkest moments, the God who made promises to you in the past is still on the throne of heaven, and he is watching over you, and he is working out his plan for you. And the final book is the book where this psalm is. And this book is designed to energize the people of God to put their hand to the work of God so that they can exercise a bold faith that will bring about the work of God in their lives. And so to help them do this, Ezra goes all the way back to the life of David, way back at the very beginning of the nation, and he pulls a psalm out of David's life, and he puts it right here in the midst of a nation that desperately needs the faith of David hundreds of years later. And that's really where most of us live. We live in a time in our lives, we live in a time in our families, we live in a time in our marriage, we live in a time as a church where we desperately need David's kind of faith. We need the God of David. We need the God of Solomon. We need the God of Ezra to do for us what he did for them. And so this morning, what I want to do very quickly, very briefly, is look at three ways in Psalm 138 that David points to that builds the kind of faith that we need as a church. We are here in this building because two congregations had faith, and we exercised that faith, and we stepped out on that faith. And whether you're a college student, or whether you're a senior citizen, or whether you're married or single, or you're in your employment, at the front end of your employment, or at the back end of your employment, whether you're married or single, or you have kids, you are at a place in your life, or you will be at a place in your life where you need this kind of faith. Where does a bold faith come from? David says, well, bold faith comes, first of all, from a grounding in gratitude for the past faithfulness of God. The way you get bold faith, David says, is you look back on the way God has worked and you express deep gratitude for the faithfulness of God. You can see this in the first three verses of the psalm. David says, I give thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Notice the worship terminology that David involves. He talks about giving thanks two times in these three verses. He talks about singing praise. That's a worship context. He uses the expression bow down. That's always in the Psalter a worship expression. So David is talking about worship, and as he worships God, he is thinking back to God's past faithfulness. I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods, I sing your praise. I bow down toward your holy temple. In David's day, there wasn't a temple. Solomon built that temple. And so there is even faith that the tabernacle that David worshiped at would one day be the glorious temple that God put in his heart. Even in the past worship of God, there is bold faith in something that is yet to come. I give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness, for you have exalted above all things your name and your word. On the day I called, you answered me. My strength of soul, you increased. David says, let me tell you how I got faith. Let me tell you how God increased that faith. As God began to work in my life and those moments when I needed faith, I would go back and I would ground the faith that I needed in the past faithfulness of God. And the reason I could do that is because of something that is true about God. He honors something above everything. And the thing he honors above everything is his name, which is why he is always faithful to his word. David says, you exalted your name above everything, even your word. The word for term, or the term for word in that little line, is the word for promise. David says, you have honored your name. You put it above everything. Your character is above everything else in your mind, and your character depends on your truthfulness to your promise. And David said, God made some big promises to me. God has made promises to me as a person. God gave me great privilege as a young boy raising up sheep in my father's house. And God took me from that place and he put me over his entire nation. And in the midst of all of that privilege, he gave me great promise. And the promise he gave me was that one day, one of my sons would sit on my throne and he would never be tumbled out of that throne. He would be on that throne forever. And as part of that promise, that's why I sing praises to God in the presence of the gods. That's a really interesting statement, isn't it, in verse 1? Where David says, I sing praise, I bow down, I give thanks to the Lord. And the context of all of this worship is coming as I do it in the presence of the gods. Small g. He's talking about the pagan nations. God had taken this little shepherd boy and put him on the throne of a small nation and surrounded that nation with all of the pagan nations of the world that worship false deities. And in the middle of all of those nations is this young king sitting on a throne, and he worships, he praises, he thanks, and he bows down to a God that can't be seen. And he does it with no shame in the presence of all of those nations. One day, David knows that those nations are actually going to join him, and they are going to turn from their idols, and they are also going to worship the God of heaven. But there is something David points to. He says, listen, I have grounded my bold faith in the past faithfulness of God, and there's a moment where this came to be in my life. On the day I called, there was a day of trouble. On the day I called, you answered me, and you strengthened the boldness of my soul. Now, there were many moments in David's life where he called out to the Lord. You remember in Psalm 42, he says, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil in me? Hope in God. And so here's the idea that David is saying, there were moments in my life where there were no human deliverers available, and I hoped in God, and he answered me. Think about the time that David committed great sins against the Lord. There was the time when he numbered the troops, and God was so displeased at the arrogance of David's heart and the self-confidence that David had in his army that he sent a plague, and David called out to the Lord for forgiveness. He called out to the Lord for remembrance, and on the day he called, God answered, God heard, and God sent grace. Think about the day when he stood on the battlefield facing the giant Goliath. Beth and I have had the experience over the last week or so. We found a little series on the life of David that is absolutely fabulous. There are a lot of little extra pieces in the series that the videographers and storytellers have put in to kind of make it fleshed out, but the storyline is stunning, and the scene where David is standing on the battlefield in front of Goliath is absolutely stunning. I was on the edge of my seat. And as he takes a run at that giant, out of his mouth is coming a cry to the Lord, the God of the hosts of Israel. And on that day, God delivered. You know, you and I need that kind of boldness in our faith, and the only way we're going to get that kind of boldness is when we can go back into our life and we can say, now the God who is faithful because he honors his word above his name, that God made promises to me, and those promises have already had actions to them, because when I called and needed deliverance in this area or that area, God heard me and he answered. We need it as a church. That's why we have this day. You heard the story of how we were praying at Palmetto and the Welcome family was praying, and God was hearing those prayers. And 13 years earlier, when that prayer went up, God heard and he answered by putting the burden to start a church that would eventually be the big answer to the prayer. 13 years earlier, God put that burden in a man's heart to start the church. You're going to need that kind of faith. I'm going to need that kind of faith. And that kind of faith comes when we anchor in the past faithfulness of God. Well, what does that faith do? And that's the second thing David points to beginning in verse 4. And going through verse 6, David says that kind of faith is fueled, it is energized by confidence in God's future purposes. The reason I trust God in the past is because of what God intends to do in the future. And so what is it that God intends to do in the future? Look at verse 4. All the kings of the earth will give you thanks. David knew way back at the beginning, when he was seated on the throne of a brand new nation that was surrounded by much larger, richer, finer, more militarily strong nations who worshiped all the pagan gods in the pantheon of gods, he knew that God had designed that at one point in the future, those kings and those nations would bow down and give thanks to the Lord. They would give thanks because of the gospel that they would hear. You can see that in verse 4. Again, all the kings of the earth will give you thanks, O Lord, because they have heard the words of your mouth. They have heard the gospel from the mouth of God. This is exactly what Micah was talking about in Micah chapter 4. This is what Isaiah was talking about in Isaiah chapter 2 when he said, listen, Israel, one day God is going to establish you as a mighty nation, and all of the nations of the earth are going to stream to you, and they're going to come into your gates, and they're going to come into your cities, and they're going to come before your temple, and they are going to listen to you as you teach them about the great God of heaven. And when they learn about the great God of heaven, they are going to bow down, and they are going to worship, and they're going to sing, and they're going to give thanks to the same God that you're giving thanks to. And this is going to happen when they hear the gospel. And this is going to happen when they see the glory of God in Jesus. You can sing, or you can see this in the next line. And they will sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. And so here's David, and he is announcing way back at the beginning of the nation what God intends to do through that nation in its future. The nation is going to be the vehicle, the mouth, by which the gospel from God will go forth and the glory of God will be seen. How in the world will this Spanish community around us hear the gospel? How will it ever see the glory of Jesus? And the answer is somebody is going to have to take that gospel to them. And somebody is going to have to display the beauty of the gospel through their lives that have been transformed by Jesus. And that's exactly why we're here. That's why this psalm is so important to us. We will never accomplish the purposes of God in the future if we don't understand why we're here. That's why you heard in the video, this has never been about us. This has never been about us being comfortable. This has never been about us having a nice place to worship. This has always been about God giving us a mission and then resourcing that mission so that we can take the gospel of God to the nations so they can see the glory of God in the face of Jesus and they can experience a third thing. They can experience the wonder of grace. You can see that, can't you, in the psalm? For though the Lord is high, he regards the lowly. This is exactly what Isaiah meant. You've probably underlined this verse in your Bible. For thus saith the one who is high and lifted up, Isaiah 57:15. Who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place, but I also dwell with him who is of a contrite and lowly spirit. To revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite. You know why you have a message to take to the Hispanic community around us? Because you've experienced this. You've humbled yourself. You know what it's like for the God who is high and lifted up to come close to you and to minister grace to you and to speak words of comfort to you and to enliven your heart and to give you hope in the midst of all of your despair. You have experienced that like David experienced that. Can you imagine what it felt like for David to stand in front of the nation and have the prophet Nathan come to him and tell him a story about some dude who had a sheep or had a guest come in, and he came down to his neighbor, and he took his one sheep, slaughtered it, and fed it. Can you imagine the anger that came up in David's heart at the injustice of that, only to find out that it was a story with a moral? And Nathan the prophet looks at David and puts his arm, this is how I imagine it, he puts his arm around David, and he says to David, David, that story I just told you that made you so mad, that story was about you. You were the one who did that. You did that when you took Uriah's wife, Bathsheba. You did that when you slaughtered Uriah. You are the one who God is telling this story about. Can you imagine all of the weight of the guilt that came crushing down on David, because now everything that he had tried to keep hidden was open. It was known. And David said, on the day I called to God, he heard me, and he gave boldness to my soul. Psalm 52, he cries out to the Lord. Psalm 32. In Psalm 32, he said, when I confess my sin, then, at that moment, immediately you forgave. And you gave boldness to my soul. And you and I need that kind of boldness when we sin. We need that kind of boldness, not just when we sin. We need that kind of boldness when we are overwhelmed by the trials of life, when we're overwhelmed by and betrayed by the people around us. I mean, think of David, betrayed by his own son Absalom, betrayed by his incredible counselor Ahithophel, and all of a sudden his world come crashing down, and he cries out to God, and he is delivered. And all of a sudden David could look at people like you and people like me, and he says, listen, you have a God who can strengthen your faith no matter what situation you're in, no matter whether it's a situation of your own sin or a situation of betrayal or a situation of trouble. And the reason God does this is because he has a great future mission that he wants to accomplish. He wants the kings of the nations to worship. And while we don't necessarily have kings of the nations, we do have the nations around us. We have a whole group of nations that have moved into this area, and here we are, a little church with almost nothing to our name, and all of a sudden God plops 15 acres and all of this property and 37 acres, 3.5 miles from here, and you and I better ask ourselves, God, why did you do that? And it's not because of us. And it's not just the church. I mean, think about what God's plopped in your lap. Think about the preparation you have, the job he's given you, all of the ways in which God has been at work in your life. And it's not for you. It's because God has a future mission that he wants to accomplish. And that mission is going to require bold faith. Bold faith starts in the past faithfulness of God. It is fueled by the future purposes of God. But it is sustained, and this is the last thing and will be done, it is sustained by grace-enabled dependence in the midst of the present circumstances of your life. And what are those, David? So tell us. You told us how you got faith. You told us why you have faith. And now tell us how it worked out for you. What are the circumstances that you had to walk through? David says, though I walk in the middle of trouble, you preserve my life. You stretch out your hand against the wrath of my enemy. Your right hand delivers me.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.